Many know Kimberly Williams Paisley as the bride in the beloved Steve Martin remakes of the Father of the Bride movies, her many film and television roles, or the wife of country music artist Brad Paisley. But until recently, Kim was dealing with a tragic secret. Her mother, Linda, was suffering from a rare form of dementia that slowly crippled her ability to talk, write, and eventually recognize people in her own family. Now with the book Where the Light Gets In, Losing My Mother Only to Find Her Again, Kim is sharing the full story of Linda's illness, called primary progressive aphasia, from her mother's early onset diagnosis at the age of 62 to the present day. Again, the name of the book is Where the Light Gets In, Losing My Mother Only to Find Her Again, and we welcome Kimberly Williams Paisley to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
At what point in this time did you decide that you wanted to write the story about your mom, and ultimately you and your mom?
I wrote an article for Red Book Magazine that was my first time to talk about losing my mom, and the response I got was incredible. People came out of the woodwork, and immediately I had hundreds of people writing me, telling me their stories, thanking me for sharing mine, and I realized how therapeutic it was. And I think it was such a relief to be able to talk about it when for so many years we didn't, and we missed out on connecting with other people and on feeling proactive, like we were doing something useful. And being able to talk about it has been not only healing for me and therapeutic, but also is empowering, because it makes me feel like I can do something about it, if not for our family, for others like our family. Our story is not over, but she's been in this sort of what feels like purgatory for a really long time. There was a lot of healing that needed to happen, and once she was removed from my dad's home and lived in a different place, I think a lot of the immediate threat was gone, and I really felt like I wanted to start picking up the pieces and making sense of what happened and trying to find the silver lining in it, which is why I've called the book Where the Light Gets In. There were a lot of surprising blessings and life lessons, and I really wanted to focus on that, on the positive parts of it, as well as the truth and the harder, stickier parts.
At what point did you learn of her diagnosis?
It was 2005. Diagnosing something like primary progressive aphasia, which is a form of dementia, it's very rare, is a complex process, and my parents got different opinions, and it took a while to achieve the final diagnosis. And actually, they won't even officially know what it is that she has until she passes away. We've been entered into a brain donation program, so hopefully that will provide some answers as to what happened.
At what point did you start to notice that things weren't the way they used to be?
The first memory I have of something being not quite right is actually at my wedding. And that's what I first start talking about in the book, is looking back that day reminds me of what was yet to come. And that was the first indication that something was amiss. First of all, she reacted really irrationally to my engagement to Brad, and was not as happy as you might expect that we were engaged. And on the day of the wedding, she was a puddle of tears and really wanted to be involved in the ceremony. It was as though she realized for the first time that she wasn't part of my ceremony. And so at the last minute, we said that she could read a Bible passage, and she got up to read it and froze and wasn't able to get through it. And it was one of those moments that it just felt like eternity, you know, in the middle of the ceremony. And finally she got through it, but it was halting, and I could tell that she was very nervous, and that was unlike her. She was used to getting up in front of people. She was very articulate, very intelligent, and didn't usually freeze like that in front of people. So looking back, I think of that as the first indicator.
You write in the book that during this time, and you write about the time where you called your mother and tell her that you're engaged, and meanwhile, Brad is sort of looking at all of this and not quite understanding it. And of course, either are you, but he has less to go on, right?
Right. He didn't know my mom before she started acting so irrational.
So how do you?
But he handled it really well. I mean, it was very uncomfortable, and certainly wasn't embracing him, welcoming him to the family with open arms. But we didn't know if it was something going on with my mom, like dementia. I mean, that never really occurred to us, frankly, or if it was just that the fact that I was the oldest in the family and the first one to get married and move out, move away.
And meanwhile, you say that your mother did warm to Brad, and that you were, and then you quickly moved on and sort of moved past the original discord.
We did. I think it always will probably stay in Brad's mind. I mean, he's let go of it, and they had a nice relationship, but we will always probably laugh about that. You know, and as I write in the book, that he's primarily responsible for allowing her to be sent away to this facility, this long-term facility, and the irony in that the one that she didn't like in the very beginning is the very one that made it possible for her to be sent away from her home.
The illness is called primary progressive aphasia, and what is that?
It's a form of dementia. It's a very rare form of dementia that attacks the frontotemporal lobe of the brain. And in my mom, the first symptoms she noticed were difficulties with speech. And then again, looking back, I think there were behavioral changes as well.
You look at those behavioral changes, and I mean, right now, when you see your mother, how much of her is the mom that you knew? Or does that change from day to day?
It changes from day to day, but she's largely nonverbal. She's in a wheelchair. She needs help with everything. She cannot do anything for herself.
Right.
The only remnants of the old mom that I used to know I see in the empathy and in the emotion. And if someone's having a hard day and is making a lot of noise on the floor, she might react to that. Certain expressions are kind of echoes of the expressions she used to make. So I see resemblance to who she was, but very vaguely, and only in brief glimpses.
Your mother's very young. I mean, she was diagnosed at just 62 years of age. So that plays into the psychology of it, doesn't it?
It does. And now, yeah, she's in her early 70s. She's still very young. And in a lot of ways, surprisingly, her body is actually healthy. And that's, you know, that's bittersweet. Because there's nothing that she can do now, and her body's healthy, but her brain isn't there. So I don't know what it looks like from where she sits. I don't know if it's flashes of memory or flashes of like a dreamlike state. It seems like she moves very quickly from feeling, you know, happy to suddenly feeling sad to feeling scared to feeling angry. It's just these flashes to falling asleep, you know, to waking up. I don't know what it's like to be her, but I can only guess. But yeah, it is tragic in a lot of ways.
You talk about that trying to figure different things out, and what comes through in the book is how much you work to educate yourself to understand what was going on, which, as you also indicate, is really a moving target.
Yes, and what I can focus on right now are the mistakes that we made, because we're still in progress. It's still happening. She hasn't passed away yet, but I can definitely and definitively point to mistakes that we made as a family and try to help other families from stepping into what we stepped into. I would recommend anyone in our position to reach out and get support and talk about it. We kept her diagnosis a secret at her request for a long time, but I think because of that, we missed out on information and help that we could have gotten from people who had been in our situation. My dad needed more support as a primary caregiver. We needed to be more specific in getting my mom to write down her wishes, and I think that would have alleviated a lot of the guilt that we felt later on as we tried to guess what she would have wanted for her end-of-life care. She said to my sister, "Don't let Dad take care of me," but she never wrote down what she meant by that. She never got more specific than that, so that by the time my dad was her primary full-time caregiver, and for years, there wasn't much we could do to alleviate that for him, and he felt like he wanted to be her primary caregiver, and he didn't know what she'd meant when she said, don't take care of me. So instead, he wanted to be Superman, and he did it all himself, and that nearly killed him.
It also puts your dad in a whole new light, too, doesn't it?
It does, and for a while, it was very uncomfortable to try to parent our parents.
Right.
To try to stand up to them, and specifically my dad, because my mom was less and less rational, but to my dad and say, we're worried about you, and you need more help. And he didn't want to hear it. Or the other mistake we made is letting my mom drive for much longer than she should have.
Right.
And watching my dad's denial about the dangers in that, and being caught, and being a long-distance caregiver for him, and feeling like our hands were tied. And so much was happening at their home in New York that we couldn't control because we were out of town and dealing with our own. I mean, I had little kids, so I was dealing with my own caregiving issues in my own house. But yeah, it was very uncomfortable standing up to him.
You touch on something in the book that you just mentioned that I think is so key to caregiving. And that I'm the youngest of five children, and I was geographically very close with my, well, and emotionally too, but close to my parents as they passed. And the conversations that I would have with my brothers who lived far away, is that there's sort of there are benefits to both of that, and the benefit that you had in being a long distance caregiver, which you write about, is very, very difficult. Of course it is, but also you can see the differences, and the changes are far more drastic and obvious to you when you come into the situation.
Definitely. My perspective was very different. And in a way, it felt like dementia was brainwashing my parents.
Right.
Obviously, it was controlling my mother's brain, but it was also controlling my father's. And that was really alarming, that he was at the mercy of this rodent that just ruled their house. You know, I mean, from the beginning, when she said, don't tell anybody about this, and he listened to her, and they got a diagnosis in October and didn't tell us until Christmas. Because he was so loyal to her and her wishes. But unfortunately, then he missed out on the reason, you know, reasoning.
Right. And when you say mistakes, I mean, those are inevitable, aren't they? We're all going to make them in this
yep.
process. There's no clear roadmap.
No, and even the people reading this book, seeing the mistakes we made, are going to make the same mistakes. That would be my guess. But hopefully not as many, and hopefully they would get help sooner and things like that. I mean, you know, I talk about in the book, we had someone who told my sister, you've got to get her to write down her wishes in writing. She told us that. But maybe if more people had told us that, maybe if we had joined support groups and heard other people talking about their experiences, we would have been more diligent about forcing her to write things down. But yeah, it's always going to be sticky and messy, and that's the nature of this disease specifically. It's just complicated, and you're dealing with someone who's losing personality and losing who they used to be. And so a lot of times we didn't know who we were dealing with. As much as possible, we try to let go of guilt, because you are going to make mistakes, and we've just got to forgive ourselves for that. And if it happened all over, I'm sure we'd make other mistakes. Nevertheless, it's still worth talking about, still worth sharing experiences and mistakes that we made in hopes that other people won't make the same ones. I mean, driving is a big one. And if we had originally gone on to, like, the Alzheimer's Association website, they have a whole page about how to get the keys away from somebody who shouldn't be driving. We should have enlisted the help of her doctors. And you know, made it a professional thing as opposed to a personal thing. We were trying so hard to protect her pride.
You end the book by asking the question of what would Mom say if she were well and could understand this book. And that's something you think about.
I think about it a lot because, of course, I never got her blessing. And last I heard, she didn't want us to tell anybody about it. So I'm certainly going against those wishes, but I have to look at what my mother taught me and who she was before she got sick. She was an amazing fundraiser for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. She loved Michael J. Fox and thought he was a great example in speaking out about his disease and looking at all the ways he has changed Parkinson's for people, that he's raised so much money for research, he's raised awareness, and he's been a beacon of light for people with that disease. And I hope that I can do the same for people in my mom's condition or their caregivers. And I think that at her core, at her best self, she would be cheering me along in this. This is what she taught me to do. She taught me to work to make the world a better place, to tell the truth, to help other people. That's what I grew up doing with her. She was an advocate for so many people, and I believe that that's what she would be telling me to do now.
I was saying to my wife as I was reading this book that if I live to be 150, I will never quite understand, not that I'm expected to, understand the mother-daughter relationship. But you write about it beautifully in the book. I mean, that's complicated as it is.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. It's very complicated. It was not a perfect relationship, and we went through a lot of ups and downs. But that's part of our story, and a lot of the unresolved issues that I had with my mother are mine to deal with, because I'll never have resolution with her. She'll never have this moment of clarity where she says, you know, I write about that in the book, where she says, I reacted really irrationally to your engagement, or, you know, I regret that I didn't give you more direct wishes when I got sick. I'm never going to hear those things, so I need to let go of them and resolve them on my own.
And it obviously has an impact on you and your family, your husband and your children, and how you react to them.
Definitely, for better or worse. In some ways, I'm relieved that my mom's not watching me parent. She might have been critical about some of the choices that I'm making, and I have a freedom in that I can parent the way I want to, and I don't have a critic in my mother. But at the same time, I do believe she's cheering me on. I still have her voice in my head, and I parent in ways that she parented me, in great ways. I read to my kids. We have adventures together. We travel together. I take them on great trips and encourage them and cheer them on in ways that she cheered me on. And I really do feel like she's living on in me and in the choices that I make for my own kids.
And then the tough questions of, do you think and worry about heredity?
Totally. And I think I will, you know, hopefully when they study my mother's brain, we'll have some answer. If it's hereditary or not, I don't have anyone in my family that's had dementia besides my mother. Even if they say it's not hereditary, I think the rest of my life I'll always wonder if, is this the moment that I'm going to look back and say, you know, oh, that's when it started? I don't know. We all have moments of forgetfulness or confusion, and I think a lot of people fear that. I mean, that's what I hear from people is, oh, sometimes I think it's happening to me. But the difference is my mom went through a couple of years with increasing difficulties that were interfering with her everyday life, and that was the difference. You know, it was different than just not getting a good night's sleep and then being scattered the next day, or having too much work on your plate and just not being able to get it all straight. But yeah, I mean, it is something that I think about.
The name of the book is Where the Light Gets In, Losing My Mother Only to Find Her Again. The book is published by Crown. Kimberly Williams Paisley, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
The name again of the book is Where the Light Gets In, Losing My Mother Only to Find Her Again. It is by Kimberly Williams Paisley. The book is published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.